Boeing Star Alliance would like to announce the late departure of flight number CST-100 from the International Space Station to Earth. Unfortunately, no passengers will be traveling on this spacecraft. Passengers are required to make other arrangements for their journey. Boeing would like to apologize for any inconvenience. Hello, welcome to Gareth Jones on Speed. I'm the Gareth Jones and he's the Zog.
Hello there.
How you doing, Z?
Not bad. Yeah, it's a sunny day. I'm going to pop out for a little walk after we've done the show, enjoy the sun.
Hey, it's not quite like that here in North Wales. It's a bit blustery, a bit grey, but I'm sitting, as you can hear, in my conservatory. The reverb of the conservatory. But I'm still better than dear Alex Goy.
Poor Alex, yeah. Oh, yeah, he's a bit poorly today. So, yeah, feel better soon, Alex. Get well soon.
Yeah, he really isn't very well at all. So we wish him all the best, recovering from that as quick as possible. But what's happened is it's kind of thrown our plans for the show into the air, and they've come down in a random way. So Zog and I, just before we started recording, decided that for this episode of Gareth Jones on Speed, we're not going to have a list. We're not going to have a preset selection of topics that we're going to talk about. We're just going to freestyle it. Let's see how this goes. It'll be interesting. We've got to start with Formula One, though, because it's almost always foremost in our minds, isn't it?
We've just had the Dutch Grand Prix at Zandvoort, and it was an interesting weekend, a fascinating weekend, although not in the sense of actually being an interesting race, really. I mean, I don't know, you know, for me, it wasn't a tremendously exciting race at all, but it was very significant, I think, for the fact that, you know, with Norris's win and the gap to Verstappen and Leclerc, you know, it really looks like the championship fight could really be on. Maybe it's happening.
Anticipation for something is almost as good as the thing that you enjoy. You know, we've just had this gap in the F1 season, so you're looking forward to the first race, and pretty much no matter what happens, that first race back is going to be a disappointment because you've been gasping for it for a long time. But I think you absolutely nailed it, Z. You said it wasn't an exciting race in terms of, oh, it could change. Very, very clear that this McLaren is in the hands of Norris, particularly a useful race car, man, and it's making the other cars suddenly look like they're struggling to keep up. And like you said, this is huge for the championship. I never predicted Norris for the championship this year, but he's in with the shot now, isn't he?
Well, he is. I mean, it's he's in with the shot. He has a chance. It's not much of a chance, though. You know, let's be realistic about it. Verstappen's lead is 70 points. Now, to make that gap up in what remains of the season, Norris is going to have to score almost 7.8 points per race more than Verstappen. Now, what are the chances of him, you know, over the next 9 races, outscoring Verstappen by an average of nearly 8 points? The thing that could help here is Piastri. It would be a significant boost to his chances, to his slim chances, if McLaren and Piastri are playing the team game and are focusing on getting maximum points for Lando at every race, and they're prepared to sacrifice opportunities that Piastri might have. Yeah, they've got to do everything to make this happen. Because at the same time that the McLaren does seem to be clearly a quicker car than the Red Bull most of the time now, that's not going to be enough. That probably won't be enough given the to and fro, the strokes of luck that you have over a few races, and also the formidable racing ability of Verstappen and Red Bull. Would you think, does it have to be team orders? Do they have to be doing that now? Or can they afford to let their drivers race?
I'm interested in what you said about Piastri coming into play. I think Zak Brown's mindset at the moment, from listening to how he talks about things, is that McLaren winning the championship might be more important to that team at the moment as constructors, the constructors' championship, rather than the driver winning.
Now, sure.
We all care about the driver's championship. That's the personality. That's the headline. But it's a business, and McLaren have had some financial difficulties, extreme financial difficulties over the last 5 years, let alone the last 10 or 12 years. You know, they had to sell their own headquarters and lease it back in order to free up capital to continue functioning. That's how severe it was, and the ownership of various elements of McLaren has changed dramatically over the last few years. And I think that factor will want McLaren to be seen as a successful constructor more than ever. And therefore, if, you know, the hypothetical position of Piastri being ahead of Norris, but Norris is two places down, how are they going to maximise their points? They'll go with the maximum points for the team, not for Norris. I hope I'm wrong, but I think that's how Zach Brown sees it.
Yeah, well, I think you could be right about that, because, you know, drivers tend to care about, focus on the World Drivers' Championship, and the teams tend to care more about the Constructors' Championship. As you say, it has financial implications. You know, where you come in the Constructors' Championship determines how much money you get from the pot of TV money that is distributed to the teams. You know, and that's a big deal. You know, quite apart from just the prestige, and, you know, if you're in a competition, of course, you always want to win it. But yeah, so I think you could well be right about that. So you're saying if there's a situation where McLaren could maximise the points that Lando would be getting, but it would reduce the number of points that the team was getting, they're going to choose the team over the driver. That's what you think.
That's just my view. I hope I'm wrong, like I say.
Well, let's see. I mean, you know, it'll be interesting to see if that situation arises, which call they make.
Psychology is a big part in this as well. And McLaren have the momentum at the moment. They believe they have the fastest car, and they are getting good data. Clearly, they're able to predict. They haven't sort of stumbled on something accidentally. It's clear that they have an understanding of, because they're able to maintain this at a variety of circuits now.
Well, if I can just butt in for a moment. They do appear to have been surprised, though, by just how effective,
yes,
you know, the upgrades they've added recently have been. You know, of course, they were expecting to be quicker. They weren't expecting to be that much quicker, it seems.
Okay, yeah. So the truth is always somewhere in between the two, isn't it? Yeah, that's always the case. So, like you say, they're going to need to have a perfect season. In order to achieve it, they're going to have to rely on some bad luck for Verstappen. You know, he's going to have to get in a tangle with Alonso, a tangle with Lewis, a tangle with Sainz, Leclerc, Stroll, anyone, it doesn't matter, or an engineering failure, or a tyre puncture from a bit of carbon fibre. Luck is going to have to play part in this as well. Maybe not luck, but good or positive influences are going to play a part in this.
Yeah, I think you're right about that. But let's consider the question then. What are the chances of Verstappen completing the next 9 races without getting into any kind of consequential scrap, or without there being any mechanical issues?
He's angry at the moment, Verstappen, isn't he?
Well, and also, because he doesn't have a dominant car at the moment, he's much more likely to be in, you know, wheel-to-wheel racing situations that he wouldn't have been in at the start of the season so often. When he would, you know, tend to, you know, run away from the field. There's going to be more close racing for him for the rest of the season. And given how he races, you know, I think that's going to mean, I don't think he's going to get to the end of the season without another incident, without another coming together.
I think you've just said, watch this space. There's almost certainly a mathematical certainty of drama about to play out in front of us.
Let's see. Okay, in other F1 news, Sainz to Williams, what do you reckon?
It's musical chairs. that was the least worst option available to him at the time. I think he's wasted at Williams. They are certainly making tremendous progress.
Credit to them, they are doing well, yeah.
Yeah, but they are a long way off, and there's a huge hill to get over in front of them in the shape of Aston Martin and even Alpine. You know, there are lots of very handy teams out there, and I can't see Williams clawing more than one or two places up the grid from their notional position last but one at the moment or thereabouts. They will get there. Will Sainz's patience hang, you know, will he have enough patience to hang around until it does happen? It's going to take 5 years, man, to turn that round somehow. There needs to be a big change. Where else could he have gone? Don't send him to Haas. That makes him look like an ex-Ferrari driver.
Well, a Sauber kick turning into Audi was a possibility.
Yeah, that one, again, they've got a huge... I'm glad he turned them down. I think their journey's even greater than Williams. Williams have at least shown the start of a turnaround. You need nothing short of a revolution in Hinwil to make Sauber Audi a top 10 team, let alone a top 5 team, you know what I mean?
Yeah, well, and also the new version of Sauber kick has not, you know, emerged yet. We're still at the tail end of the team that is going to become Audi. There's a lot of uncertainty, you know, along the way in terms of how those plans are going to be, you know, refined and how they'll unfold.
They kicked out Andreas Seidel.
Yeah.
Who I thought was doing a great job at McLaren. And when he went to Sauber, I thought, oh, this guy's going to be useful. But he's been booted. Wow.
Well, maybe some, you know, backroom politics or just... who knows? It's not... I mean, yeah. Yeah, I don't know.
We're guessing.
Enough about the situation to speculate. But it does speak to kind of uncertainty for the future. You know, that doesn't look like a team that has a clear, unhindered, well-planned path to success. You know, they're still figuring it out.
Yeah, man. It's all going to revolve around the change of regulations, the 2026 season, where the playing field will be flatter than it has been, more level, closer to the horizon, the horizontal horizon, than it has been. And that will stir up the grid. Absolutely. Some teams will not do as well as they hoped, and others will do better. But, you know, we've got to get there first. So, Sainz at Williams, it's a good holding position. I'm really surprised they didn't ask him to replace Perez. I think that would have been the smartest option. But there was some dynamic there that didn't allow that to happen, really. Heartbreaking.
Interesting,
but hey,
yeah,
loads to come. Let's take a break. So I want to talk to you about 1,000 other things outside of Formula One. Jared Isaacman, as one of the astronauts taking part in the Polaris Dawn space flight, the world's first privately funded mission to feature a spacewalk, you must be more than a little nervous.
Oh no, I'm not nervous. I have full confidence in the design of the SpaceX Crew Dragon and the ability of the team to conduct this mission.
But the vehicle doesn't have an airlock, so in order for astronauts to exit, it has to be completely depressurized and the hatch left open to space. Doesn't this bother you?
No, quite the opposite. In fact, you know, this is a 10-day mission. And the SpaceX toilet is going to get a real hammering from some major use by the 4-person crew. Hell, we'd be glad to crack a window for some fresh air. Excuse me.
I did a drive the other day, Zog. I drove from North Wales to Preston and back. It's some 80 miles distance and 160 return. It was a long, miserable drive over the bank holiday weekend with too much traffic, all going in the same direction as me. It was grim. But a couple of things I noticed while I was out on the road I wanted to share with you. And the first one was a Volkswagen Passat CC. You know, the coupe version of the Passat.
Yes.
Now, the car itself, this is an older version of the car from a few years ago. It's got a name in its own right now. I can't remember what it's called. But the older one was called the Passat CC. But it wasn't the car that got my attention. It was the number plate. Now, this car was slightly darkened windows, slightly lowered, slightly too fat, non-original trims. You know, it was, I wouldn't say tastefully done. And the number plate was in a... Now, is it a font or a typeface? I beg to your knowledge.
Interchangeable. Honestly, I mean, I have strong opinions about choice of font or typeface. Now that you're putting me on the spot, I'm not sure that I can tell you what the... I use the words interchangeably. I suspect if we did a deep dive into it, we would find out something like... That, you know, font was the description of the letter shapes, whereas a typeface is maybe a more sort of
mechanical.
Yeah, exactly, mechanical. It's somehow rooted in actual typesetting and, you know, hot metal type. I don't know. I'm interested now. After the show, I'm going to look this up.
Cool, great. As my general rule, if I'm talking about something in the digital realm, I use font, but if I'm talking about something in the real world, I'll use typeface. That's probably wrong, okay. But that's how I approach it. So the pattern, the shape, the style of the letters of the letters on this number plate was notable. Number one, the I'm going to say font, because have you seen the way Transit is written on the back of the Ford Transit? They've got a slight italic quality to it, right? And leans forward, I think, the word Transit. It was very much in a font like that. It may not have been the Transit font, I'm going to say. I don't mean typeface. And it was low contrast between the black and the yellow. And the font was occupying what looked to me like a third of the height. So the letters and the numbers, a third of the height of the number plate. Now,
sounds like it may not have been an entirely legit legal plate. Is that what you're thinking?
Yeah. I couldn't read it. I could not read it. I tried from distances. The combination of the font and my near vision is pretty poor. I have to wear glasses to look at the phone, right? But my distance vision is pretty good, and I could read all the others. I could not read this. I can't believe it. I'm wondering how long before this guy gets pulled over and how they think that they can get away with this and why they want to. They're clearly hiding from something. Maybe they like driving too fast, or they're carrying something in the car they don't want to, but man, that's going to draw attention. It's not going to make the situation better, is it?
You know, you're going to get pulled over. You're going to get busted for running plates like that. Not every time you go out, but if you've got those kind of plates and you're doing much driving, it's going to be a nuisance. It's got to be more hassle than it's worth, really, you know.
It's not making it better, are you, really?
Yeah, and if you are really motivated to avoid detection, I think you do something smarter than, you know, spraying your number plate with hairspray or getting a custom fancy font thing.
Well, James Bond had the solution on his DB5, the rotating number plate, didn't he?
Talk about fonts and typefaces. That reminds me that one of the things on my mind recently has been the relationship between pop culture and cars and car sales, because we are having a brat summer. Charlie XCX released her thoroughly excellent album, Brat, this summer, which has a solid green cover with the word Brat in lowercase black on it. It's quite a bright sort of lime green. And it seems to have had quite an impact, beyond the impact you might expect a Charlie XCX album to have. Auto Trader reports a significant uptick in people checking out ads for bright green cars.
No!
Now, what we don't know is how that has translated into sales of those cars, but it does seem that her album may actually have had a measurable effect on the sales of green cars, which I find fascinating.
As Janis Joplin did for Mercedes-Benz, you might say.
Well, now, but you see, this is where it gets interesting, because I did a little bit of research on this, and I couldn't find any evidence that Janis Joplin singing about Mercedes-Benz had an influence on the sales of Mercedes-Benz. Although you would expect that. I mean, it can't hurt to have that place in popular culture. It can't help to have the reference there. But there doesn't need any evidence of it. Similarly, you know, Prince, Little Red Corvette. You know, if I'm going to pick a personal favourite from all of the songs about cars that we pick, that's probably going to be the one I go for. Doesn't appear to have affected Corvette sales.
You just reminded me, I wrote a song for Gareth Jones on Speed in the style of Prince. I've not yet published many years ago, called Little Purple Chevette, which is... if Prince was British, that's the song he would have written, Little Purple Chevette. Purple! I've got a purple car. Prince. I love a bit of Prince. It can influence colour.
And, you know, I know people who have, you know, chosen purple things in various areas of their lives. Yep. You know, bicycles, air cylinders for their Target air pistols, you know, chosen them in purple because they're Prince fans. So, of course, you absolutely get, choices made because of, you know, personal preferences in other areas of your life. And I wonder if there's a thing here. I mean, is it possible that, you know, things like the visual impact of Charlie XCX's album cover and other visual elements in pop culture, they will absolutely affect your colour choice when you're buying a car, but you're much less likely to be influenced by a specific mention of a model or a company in a song. Mm. That there's a kind of vaguer thing whereby you sort of feel like you're making your own choices rather than being influenced to consider buying a Corvette because you've just heard Prince singing about it.
Well, as Brian Eno says, culture is that which you choose to do.
Right.
And a great example of that is Data in Star Trek, who is described as a culture of one. Well, actually two, really, but he's a culture of one. And that's as valid as anyone else's culture. So, you know, we build this identity around us influenced by our choices, that which we choose or allow to build up our Venn diagram of representation. Gosh, that was very fluid. You know, I wear a lot of red. I'm a Welshman, right? That I choose that. I drive a purple car because I think it's kind of rock and roll, and that's sort of part of my identity too. And so you can do that. That happens. And I think if this is true, that this album has influenced colour choice, that's great. But coming back to Janis Joplin and Mercedes-Benz, yeah, there being no evidence that she did increase individual sales of Mercedes-Benz, I think it's a lot more subtle than that. I think the influence of that song and the context where she's aspiring to owning a Mercedes-Benz, oh, Lord, won't you buy me a Mercedes-Benz? You know, it's like saying a Rolls-Royce. You wouldn't get away with it if you said, a Proton, or buy me a Proton. You know,
right.
It's elevated. It's taken a band which is perceived as being aspirational and elevated it or supported that idea. So whilst it won't sell individual cars, it will help Mercedes-Benz as a brand retain that prestige that most people aspire to, I think. That people like to better themselves. You wear tidy clothes, you wear posh cars. That's what people do, right? I'm a bit alternative. I go my own way. But people do that. And so this has real value. You've watched The Boys, haven't you, on Amazon Prime?
I have. I haven't watched all of it.
Okay.
But I have watched it.
No spoilers. But you've watched Succession on Sky?
No.
Okay. All right, context then. In both of those TV series, the events that happen in the real world are broadcast instantly on social media, and that gives a reaction to the brand value on the NASDAQ exchange. It's as quick as that. Okay, how does that read? You know, we just sacked 3,000 people in Peru, big corporations, and it's kind of that live change, that value. I bet every time Janis Joplin sings "Won't You Buy Me a Mercedes-Benz," if it's shared on social media, the NASDAQ for Daimler Corporation will just pip up one immeasurable but measurable amount. That's my belief.
I can believe you may be right about that. I'm also going to suggest, though, that given the number of other factors that can be coming into effect, you know, the Mercedes-Benz share price on any given day, I say it would be Daimler AG is probably the quoted share price.
Correct.
But the number of other things that are going to be affecting that price, I'm going to go out on a limb here and say they're going to be more significant than Mercedes, Janis Joplin getting a play on the radio, and probably it's lost in the noise. But it may well be that, yeah, for sure. And what you say about those kinds of mentions in popular culture increasing or maintaining, you know, a vaguer brand value kind of thing. Yeah, no, absolutely true. No, that's absolutely true.
If only she said, "Oh Lord, won't you buy me an MG or Rover?" Having said that, the MG fight back's pretty good.
Yeah, you know, it is actually, it is. Although, just on another note, I did a quick look into when the first mention of a car in popular music.
Great.
And the first one I could find.
Hang on, can I make a guess?
Yeah, go on.
I'm going to make a guess. Okay, cars entered popular culture turn of the century. 1909, 1915, the working class people could afford cars for the first time. So there could well be a song from the... Yeah, but in the 1920s, there were lots of Bugatti, Rolls-Royce, very expensive cars, probably outselling basic cars. So was there a song in the style of, hang on, let me think, a vaudeville act or something like that in the 1920s? Oh, I really want a Duesenberg, be fine. 1920s okay. Is what I'm going to say.
I'm going to absolutely guarantee that there were some 1920s vaudeville music hall songs about cars.
I bought a flivver. I love
absolute
flivver.
Dead sir. But I didn't get that far because I came up with... Now, this is an instrumental. This is sheet music.
Accounts?
Not a song with lyrics.
It's music.
Sheet music. 1899, The Studebaker Grand March.
Wow!
How about that?
Wow! Yeah.
So cars and automotive brands have been making their presence felt in the world of popular music for well over a century. This is, you know, there's nothing new going on here. But of course, it's a two-way thing because, you know, we've talked about how there was no measurable effect on the sale of Corvettes by Prince Higginbotham. But, you know, the reason that Prince wrote the song Little Red Corvette about a little red Corvette is because of the place of Corvettes in popular culture. You know,
it's self-breeding.
It's just that, you know, there's very much a circular relationship, I think, here between, you know, cars and popular culture. And while it does seem like the hard evidence for pop culture, for pop music boosting sales of any kind of cars is very thin on the ground, I think we could celebrate a wonderful British music export having a rare measurable effect on the numbers here. So well done, Charlie XCX. Keep on keeping on.
Thank you for bringing that to my attention. I have no idea who Charlie XCX what is?
XCX. Well, you definitely know some of her music because Super Love was on one of our Le Mans playlists.
Was it?
And there would have been, I can't think, there would have been a couple of other Charlie XCX tracks on there as well, I think. But certainly Super Love has been on Le Mans playlists. She's fantastic. I think she's a wonderfully talented writer, producer, performer.
Yeah, but I bet she didn't write a song with the name of a very obscure Brazilian car that influenced the Jensen Interceptor in it, the Brasinka Urapuru. I was listening back to the last episode of Gareth Jones on Speed, and the song FF, Ferguson Formula in there, quotes the Brasinka Urapuru. And if you didn't know the story of the development of the Interceptor and the FF, you'd have no idea why we're quoting that car. Front like an ISO, back like a bubble. But I don't know, if you listen to the last episode of On Speed with all the songs, all my songs sung by proper great singers, not me. Man, it was a treat. I really enjoyed that. And if you didn't hear it, I'm not just talking to you, Zog, I'm talking to anyone else downloading the show. Catch it while you can. It's a good one. Hey, but Z, that's it, man. Listen, we've got to kill it there, brother.
Good seeing you. Good to talk, man. And let's do it again in a couple of weeks.
Well, in a couple of weeks, it's going to be episode 500 of Gareth Jones on Speed.
Yes.
Plans are still coalescing as to how this will manifest. What I'm going to do now is end recording and continue this call because Zoc and I need to plot. See ya for episode 500 of Gareth Jones on Speed, 2 weeks from the day this episode was released. Say bye, Zoc.
Bye, Zoc.
And bye, Gareth. It's got to be right.
Yeah, you know what I mean.
If you enjoyed this show, then please like, share and subscribe. For information on how to contact the show, see pictures, read song lyrics, follow us on social media, or to sponsor this podcast, go to garethjones.tv. Gareth Jones on Speed is made in Wales by Whizbang.
Gareth Jones on Speed!